thing at Westminster Seminary this spring. And definition of theistic evolution from Dr. John West, let's put it, it left me a little aggravated. The effort to reconcile Darwin's theory of undirected evolution with belief in God in general and Christian theology in particular. In other words, theistic evolution is apparently the view that God directs an undirected process. It's an oxymoron. As someone who thinks that theistic evolution is my viewpoint, I didn't appreciate that. Now, West does think that it was possible in the 19th century when Darwin's mechanisms were not widely accepted, theologians could come up with a method by having God and evolution both occur. But he said that, to quote, now, when the 20th century came around and the neo-Darwinian synthesis was proposed, now one had to reconcile theism not just with the idea of universal common ancestry, but with the idea that the development of life was driven by an undirected process based on random genetic mistakes. But how can God direct an undirected process? Modern theistic evolutions don't offer clear or consistent answers to this question, and I don't agree. And in fact, what I want to do is talk about the nature of providence and propose a way of thinking about what I still see as a problem. And the problem is, if we mean by providence that God actually changes the way the natural system turns out, science has a problem, because you can't make predictions. But if we don't mean that, then what do we mean by God governing it, governing the system? How do you put those two things together? Now, we can take it by faith that this is what happens, and I think we should take it by faith. The scripture says this is what's true, but it'd be nice to have a model that works. So I'm going to propose a model that works for me. We'll see whether you think it works. But first I wanted to do a quick review of those 19th century theologians that didn't listen to Darwin. And I wanted just two or three quotes, basically the Princetonian guys. First, Hodges' critique, when he quoted Gray, Asa Gray, there at the end, he said, if Mr. Darwin believes that the events which he supposes to have occurred and the results we behold around us were undirected and undesigned, or if the physicist believes that the natural forces to which he refers phenomena are uncaused and undirected, no argument is needed to show such belief is atheistic. In other words, Hodge considered it atheistic to say any natural forces are undirected, not just Darwin's ideas, but Darwin's forces, certainly, yes. The problem with Darwin was not his mechanism. The problem was that Darwin said God didn't have his hand on it, apparently. Warfield agreed, again, following Hodge, agreed. Mr. Darwin's difficulty arises on one side from his inability to conceive of God as immanent, and his consequent total misapprehension of the nature of divine providence. So Darwin doesn't understand God's providence. And when Hodge talks about human origins, again, he says, well, this became a real problem when Charles Darwin wrote, and it's not going to sink back into obscurity until, quote, we understand that evolution cannot act as a substitute for creation, but at best can supply only a theory of the method of the divine providence. So again, Darwin's mechanisms were God's hand in providence. And finally, and I'm going to quote this one in full. Actually, I was going to, I forgot about the fact that this is ID's view of theistic evolution, I think. Sort of God backs out and lets it go one way or another. I forgot to put them up. And this is B.B. Warfield. P.B. Warfield was an outstanding theologian, and his view of evolution was the Darwinian view. He was thoroughly understanding of it. And I wanted to quote one, particularly because of the emphasis that Dave Hoffer wants to make. I want to quote this in greater length than it says here. I mean, he got really aggravated here. He was reviewing Vernon Kellogg's book in 1907. He says, "The anti-teleological implications of Darwinism taken in its strictness when it becomes a system of pure accidentalism is obvious. But it should have been hoped that we had got by now well beyond all that. Some lack of general philosophical acumen must be suspected when it's not fully understood that teleology is in no way inconsistent with, is rather necessarily involved in, a complete system of natural causation. Every teleological system implies a complete cosmomechanical explanation as its instrument. Why then should the investigators of the cosmomechanical explanation array themselves in Ptolemaic, opposition to the very conception of governing purpose? Above all, why should they make the test of the acceptability of theories, the recognition or non-recognition by them of teleological factors? This gives a disagreeable appearance to the trend of biological speculation. We do not say of biological investigation that it's less interested in science for science's sake, that is, in the increase of knowledge, than it is in the validation of a naturalistic worldview, that it's dominated in a word by philosophical conceptions not derived from science but imposed on science from without." Now, what Warfield is saying is that, as you see here, teleology, if you've got a design system, if God designed it from the beginning and the end, then the cosmomechanical processes are designed. That's what it means to be designed, is that the mechanisms to produce what God intended to produce are designed. And what he's going on here to say is, you know, what's happening in science nowadays is that people are denying the reality of purpose. That, in other words, you've got an ideological intimidation happening for people who think God's hand might be real, which was happening with the naturalism movement. And Dave Hoffer wanted to emphasize that. He was pointing out from quote from Joachim Ostermann, who is a scientist, a member of the Franciscan Order, who says that scientists can be distinguished from the general population by religious beliefs based on his experiences as a scientist and a Christian, and on his knowledge of surveys of religious beliefs among scientists. And he's pointing out that surveys show that religious belief among people in research institutes is only about 50%. Other sources say 40%. And then in Larson and Whitham's second study, that the members of the National Academy of Sciences, only 7% say they believe in a personal God. And which implies that there's an ideological imprinting which happens in science education. Given the fact that the people who become scientists come from the general population who are generally believing in God. So we're taking people who do believe in God and turning them into people who don't believe in God. And the high school teachers are kind of a proxy for that here. That notice that about, the survey says that about 28% of high school biology teachers do not see the possibility that God had a hand in the origin of humans, but that's true of only 13% of the general population. So there is this push to say dysteleology, or the lack of purpose, is a necessary part of science. And it's not. But, you know, here's another, go to the bookstore and look. I went to Barnes & Noble and look to see what books are on the shelf, not of the shelves about religion, not on shelves about philosophy, on shelves about science. There was, by my count, 12 books on the shelf stating these are books about science, in which the author was saying, due to what we know about science now, you ought to give up the God hypothesis. So there is this real push. Now, the godless atheists over here, they warned us in the 30s it was going to happen. You know, the cartoonists from back and then. So there is this kind of a problem. How do you work with God's providence and have scientific prediction true? I mean, you don't want... I mean, if God's in there mucking around with his purposes, how can you make any predictions? Well, you can say God's governing every single thing that happens. Does that mean God's micromanaging the fall of every oak leaf so it lands at exactly the right spot? Every dragonfly that ate something in the Mesozoic that bug was targeted by God? Does it mean we have no personal freedom? Or does providence mean that there's going to be causal gaps? That seems to be what the ID movement really is looking for, is gaps in the process. Or do we look for God to only work through tweaking at the quantum level, as Russell and others have suggested? Or what we're really saying is the universe is fully gifted from the beginning, but if we say God, it's fully gifted from the beginning, in my mind, what that tends to do is become indistinguishable from deism, because I'm not sure what God's doing. He's setting up at the beginning, and all the potentials are there, and away it goes. And we argue about this. Ted Peters suggests that what we really need to do to see the teleology, to see the purposes in the universe, is you have to see the end, because what God is doing is ordaining what will happen at the end. And God's point of view for the universe, which exists in eternity, is he stands at the end of times in the eschaton and looks back through time. The foreground is the eschaton, the background is the beginnings of things. And I think that has a useful way of looking at providence. And the issue is basically this. What's the logic of the way I'm thinking of it, if it works? God stands in eternity. And when he commands, I mean, this means that when God's creative fiat is pronounced, it's not produced in time. Because time requires the existence of matter and energy. Matter and energy is what's being made. So where does God speak? He speaks in eternity. If he speaks in eternity, then his fiat creation command is the entire cosmos, not the beginning of it. Of course, from our point of view, we're experiencing time passing and causal events. But when God speaks, he speaks to the whole space and time. And this is the logic of it, as far as I can see. God's creating the end. God ordains what will be. He ordains the eschaton. But if you ordain the final state, and you need to have causal mechanisms to produce it, it implies that there's necessary causes. So they are in turn ordained events, which must be if the ends are to be realized. And that means they have necessary causes, and this process rolls back to the Big Bang and back to the quantum events. And that's basically what I think is the way to look at it. God creates from the end to the beginning. God ordains this is where it must end. This is the final good universe that I want. here's how it's going to be produced. This is going to be true. In a sense, it's the virtual multiverse. It exists virtually because God is omniscient and omnipotent and knows all possible universes in detail. And nothing exists. He's the ground of all being. Nothing exists unless he brings it into existence, unless he ordains its existence. So God ordains that particular universe which will realize the ends that he intends. Which means all of the events which occur are tied into a single causal nexus to produce that final eschatological vision that God has. But that doesn't constrain causality moving forward from the past, and it doesn't constrain science. Because what science does is look at the present conditions and predict future events. This is primary causality moving from future to past. It ordains the past by, I mean, here's the problem. This is the way we think. We plan things. Then we say, okay, I know how to make it work. And then we go ahead and work out our plan. And, it, you know, providence or miracles or whatever. That's not the way it works, in my mind. Not for God, who's in eternity. God has his plan, but God realizes his plan from the future to the past. And the arrows represent causality. So, turns everything on its head. And I don't know whether anybody is going to be too happy with this view, but it seems to me that it solves a few problems. Does that mean we can see design in the world? We see design because we have a worldview that enables us to see design, as others have said at the conference. Now, can we deduce design from the world? You don't deduce design by the things which, by gaps in the causal processes. The causal processes are what God has ordained to realize what he's producing. We are not in the eschaton. We do not know how everything is going to, in detail, how everything will work out. But I think that there are indications. I mean, we, by faith, we can know that there are, that we're going toward this final state, that God is working out his purposes. And so some things might seem more reasonable to look for. And that doesn't mean they're not working by ordinary cause and effect. But ordinary cause and effect is being, it has been set in place, has been ordained so that it would realize what God intended. And that is what I mean by holoteleology. It's all designed. Instead of nothing being designed, it's all designed. But we're not going to see it without the eye of faith. And if we've learned to not see design, we will not see it, and it cannot be demonstrated by the physical data. I do think, though, that certain people's research projects do reflect the fact that they are Christians, and it's led them to kind of reevaluate the general models. And for instance, Joan Roughgarden, looking at replacing a model of competition and the selfish gene with the development of cooperation and the genial gene, as she puts it. I mean, Richard Lewontin said, I think complexity is important because I'm a Marxist. Well, surely we could say, I think cooperation is important because I'm a Christian. I guess in trouble, though. In any case, going back to West's definition for a minute, you know, he said that He said that, let me re-quote it. That the theistic evolution is the effort to reconcile Darwin's theory of undirected evolution with belief in God in general and Christian theology in particular. That's not what theistic evolution is. Theistic evolution is that God has ordained a series of biological events which will produce creatures who will be capable of fellowshipping with him. And he's ordained the causal mechanisms that will produce that. Back to the beginning. So, this teleology, I'm afraid that what the ID people suggest this view of theistic evolution, what they're really doing is they're saying the universe is this teleological with occasional bursts of teleology put into it. And what I would say is the universe is teleological, holoteleology, it's all been designed, and there are difficulties, as the last talk talked about, but I think that there's reasons why this would help on some of those, but I think I'm out of time, probably. Yeah.